One thing is the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money, work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 126.
And this week we feature Raphael Boscaini of Masi Wines, Italy. To listen to the voice of an Italian gentleman talk about his wine, well, that's just got to be the definition of passion. We interviewed Raphael Boscaini during a co-brand tasting here in Milwaukee. With the set of Italian fermented grapes swirling around the room, we spent time learning about the very special wines of northeastern Italy. After this program, you'll likely want to learn more. I'm here with Raffaella Boscaini. We're here at a tasting in Milwaukee, which is kind of nice to have an Italian winemaker here. Welcome to Milwaukee.
Oh, thanks.
And is this your first time here?
Absolutely, first time. And very beautiful time. I mean, I've heard many times about Milwaukee since the 70s when I was watching Happy Days, even in Italy, you know. And so now I'm pleased to be here live. And then here's the town of motorbike of the Harley-Davidson, right?
That's right. Yeah, Harley-Davidson.
Good.
Are Harleys big in Italy?
It's pretty much. You know, Harley is a fate. It's not just a motorbike. It's big. It's very big.
Well, I imagine because you're a country of people driving more practical vehicles than us when it comes down to it, right?
Yes, we have probably even a better climate condition, so we can get away more easily. Not this year, I have to say, but usually you can run your motorbike from, let's say, late March until late October. So is a good 8 months.
So, Raffaella, tell me about your wine. Tell me about how long have you been in business. Let's start right there.
I mean, the winery has been established in the Veneto region, northeast of Italy. The capital city is Venice. I'm living 1 hour drive from Venice in Verona, which is the town of Romeo and Juliet. In that area, just at the foot of the Dolomites, we grow since 7th generation grapes that belongs to that area. So Corvina, Rondinella, and Molinara, totally unknown to the most of the people because they are not international varieties, but they are well established, well considered in the area, especially when they are processed in a technique called appassimento, where these grapes were placed on bamboo mats for 3 to 4 months to dry. So with these raw materials, dried grapes, not all dry, but semi-dried grapes, we make this world-famous wine called Amarone. And Masi is, the leading Amarone producer, having in his portfolio 5 different versions of this great wine. Here we are having in front of us the Costa Sera, our flagship Amarone, where there's all the experience of nearly 250 years of experience of my family in this business. You may ask, your surname is Boscaini, your winery is called Masi, where it's coming from. Masi actually was the first vineyard purchased by my ancient back in 1772. So we're called Vallo dei Masi, Masi's Little Valley. From that name, we decided to name the winery Masi. Actually, it's even a better name to pronounce and to remember.
It's short.
Yeah, of course. So thanks to our expertise in dealing with Amarone, and therefore with the dried grapes, we find out a nice and, I would say, original system to produce otherwise out of these dried grapes. drying the grapes a little bit less, mixing wine with dried grapes and having a second fermentation. This is the case of the world famous Campo Fiorin, which is now is a wine that is going to have 50 years of history this year, this kind of wine. And then another interesting wine that takes again advantage of the appassimento in a different way is Masianco. A nice, interesting, Masi's version of Pinot Grigio. You know, Pinot Grigio that is flooding the world has been reinterpreted by Masi by adding a 25% of another Venetian variety called Verduzzo, slightly dried. Why? Because when we decide to enter the Pinot Grigio business, we notice that Pinot Grigio eventually have a little bit of weakness in the mid palate, and most of the time it's pretty much short. What is great about Pinot Grigio is the drinkability and the freshness. But once again, when you sip it, it fades away from your mouth in no time. So we say that is the point where we have to work to give to the Pinot Grigio some more thickness in the mid palate, make it longer, but without killing the freshness. So we kept the Pinot Grigio straight, and we just add this 25% of semi-dried Verduzzo that plays that role, giving some more aromatics, do not kill the acidity or the freshness, and the result is a very pleasant wine that nowadays you can have, again, the drinkability of Pinot Grigio, but with more satisfaction in your palate.
One thing that's always fascinated me about Italy, and of course you can say this about a lot of grape regions, is there are so many different types of grapes. You've already mentioned that.
Yeah.
Locally, is that just sort of something taken for granted, or are the locals very familiar with these different types of grapes?
I mean, I would say 90% yes. I mean, it's pretty much normal. If I say, for example, in Verona, in my town, I always say everybody in Verona has got at least a cousin as a winemaker. So everybody knows exactly about what we are talking about when you are talking about Veronese wine. Then it's totally different if you go in another town. If you go, for example, from Verona, you move to, I don't know, to the Milan or Turin and so on. Now, Milan is a little bit different, but Turin, that's it. They are talking about Nebbiolo, and that's it. Mm. They don't even know that 200 kilometers far exists Corvina di Nera Molinara. That is the reason of this variety in Italy of grape variety, coming from the historic reason. 155 years ago, Italy were divided in 21 different countries that now more or less correspond to our region. But they were different countries. So with their own culture, their own food, try to have some food in Verona, then move to Milan, move to Turin, going in Florence, in Rome, in Sicily, or in Puglia. Totally another world. The language as well, the dialect. So that is the richness of Italy, is the diversity. And this is the why, to answer at the end of your question, we cannot even speak, generally speaking, about Italian wines. It's a regional matter. If you see entering this room, you saw the map of Italy with the marketed region. Otherwise, you cannot say just the Italian wines are all the same. It's totally different.
It's very broad. You have a very good way of telling that. When we were walking up the stairs, we were talking about, I was explaining to you what Life Between the Vines is about, but you had kind of an interesting thought on this idea of wine not being scary.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, first of all, wine is something to be enjoyed and to be sipped and to be shared with people. Drinking wine alone is a little bit, at least sad. It's tasty, but it's a little bit sad. What I always say when being part of a winery, even my friends, they are asking me when a little bit scared, a little bit shy, you have a glass of wine, oh, I like this wine, what do you think? What should I feel in this wine? I said, what do you feel? That is the reality. I cannot name, I don't know, a descriptor if you don't feel it. I cannot say that it's tasting cherry if you feel it is blueberry. You're right, it's blueberry is blueberry. But that is your intimate, sensation. That's it. Then there are some things that come with the time, with experience, that Some flavors are bad, some other are good, some other are well balanced together, some other less. But this is a question of experience and, once again, a taste. I always say that every wine has got its nobility. I cannot say this one is better than the other. I always say, for example, at my home, I always have a bottle of Lambrusco, because if I have the right salame and bread, I have Lambrusco. Of course, I have my Amarone with the right well done braised beef and stuff like that. So every wine has got its dignity. There's no class A, class B. Then, of course, the quality is another story.
Again, I like hearing this because you're not the first European person I've heard talking about this idea. Again, it's the individual, what it comes down to, what they like. It's not what I like. It's not what we tell them, right?
Absolutely. And this, I have to say, I learned that when I did my education in London at WSET, where I do remember clearly, they gave us, for the tasting part, they gave us some direction in where to go. So you have to check this, this, and this. But then they left you totally free. So to make some assumption, you have to check acidity. You have to check the tannins. You have to check the length, the color, and four or five things. And then the descriptors, the objective, are totally for you. I mean,
let's go back and talk about your education a bit. Obviously, you came up in this wine-growing family. Yeah. How did this come to you? I mean, was it something that you had to do? Or were you able to do your own thing? How did that go?
You're not the first giving me this
really?
Question. Yeah, I mean, three times a day I get this question, but the answer is always the same. I always say that I've never decided one day, I'm going to be a part of the family business, I'm going to take over in the family business. But I just simply knew since the beginning. I mean, growing in a family where your father is busy 20 hours a day, the winery, and some hours sleeping, that get nervous or sad or sometimes with anger if it's raining too much, if you have ale and stuff like that, is something that grow with you, and it's something that you are so linked to the cultivation of the vineyard, to the living of the winery, because then, of course, in September there was no excuse. There were Saturday, Sunday at the cellar and so on. And so it's something that grow with you. You feel obliged, but it's not in a bad way. It's sort of your destiny, you know, in a way. So even with pleasure, and then it's a bloody pleasant work. And
there are worse things you could do.
Of course, absolutely. But anyway, thinking deeply, I think that was a specific moment that probably make me switch inside me. I didn't realize at that time, but I realize it now. Beginning of September of, I think, 79 or 80, I can't remember exactly. I know that my parents were finishing their vacation, and I was staying with my grandparents that were living close to the vineyard. And my grandpa was totally active and so on, and he drove me all this week. He was working, going to the bank, doing some services for the cellar and so on, and from time to time, going into the vineyard. One day, let's go in the vineyard and see if the grape is ready to be picked. So he parked his car underneath the pergola, and we get off, and he went to this nice bunch. You know, it's interesting to know that nowadays, to check if the grape is ready, we keep a bunch, we chop it, we squeeze, we take the juice, we have system to measure the density of the sugar, so, you know. And you know what he did? He just take the bunch in his hand, gently squeezing without breaking, just having the sensation of the reaction. So how turgid was it? And he said, no, needs another week. So can you imagine that hand, how much experience? It's almost a miracle. I would say it's like when a mom kissed the front of the baby to see if he's got temperature. It's an experience. I mean, if you don't try, you... And that is something that probably makes something sweet in me, because all the time I think about that, it's great. This is close to nature.
That's a great story. It's all about that understanding nature and the experience and the life you've lived, right?
Absolutely, definitely. I mean, the relationship with nature that give you the rhythm. And another thing is that is my father telling me, all the time, there was this worker that works in the cellar for us, and it was all day long underneath in the dark or artificial light and so on, and it was never wearing a watch, but it was just opening the door like this, looking out. It was saying exactly the time. That is, once again, human and nature, total understanding.
Yeah, being in comfort with who you are and what's going on around you.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely.
In your family, are there other siblings, other family members involved with wine?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, of course, my father, still the leader of the winery, together with his brother, which is taking care more of the bottling and the shipping. You know, nowadays we need to have even professionality in that. And is myself taking care of the marketing and the organization of all the technical part. And my sister, older than me, is taking care of the sales, is sales director. I have another sister, but she decided when she was 4 to be a veterinarian, and she is a veterinarian. And then I have two cousins, the sons of my uncle Bruno. They are both involved. One is just started a few months ago, and now she's doing some assistant for the sale. And Anita instead is taking care of the quality control, the laboratory.
One thing about wine is the whole integration with family. Mm-hmm. And again, comes back to this idea of not being afraid of it, because families more often than not are representing wine, aren't they?
I mean, integration with the family is something that you can feel not just by the, what you see in the label, but what you have in the glass. I always say that Mazzi wine tastes like Mazzi. In a way, I mean, and is when we do tasting within competitors on, we are happy to find that hint that is difficult to describe, but that report to Mazzi. Oh, there's a Mazzi style. So when we answer ourselves, is there a Mazzi style in this wine, new, old, or whatever? Yes, also we are happy. So is our soul through the liquid, you know?
It's that connection, that familiarity, right?
Of course.
No. Can you tell me how many cases you produce?
We produce around 1 million cases.
So you're pretty good sized.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, of course, we have this large disponibility of vineyards. And what's interesting, again, and here starts again a relationship with families and so on. We rely on our own vineyards for between 50 and 55%. Then we purchase grape. From who? From families of grape growers in the area, that if I think, for example, the family Federighi, they are related with us since my grandfather. So over 100 years of relationship. They are always, through three generations, always selling grapes to Mazzi. I think we never sign any kind of contract with them, just a shaking hand and that's it, without even spitting on the hand. But just a new gentleman agreement or farmer's agreement, whatever. Nowadays, since we need, as I said, I'm coordinating all the technical part, since we need some standard of quality, I just assure with these growers to have some standard of quality. So I say, guys, we will purchase your grapes every year totally, but you have to follow our requirement. So, at the end of the day, I do for them even education. We do twice a year. We do, basically education or we teach. We link them with the professor of university, viticulture, and so on, in order to grow them. I always say, I want you to be no more farmer, but I want to be you professionals viticulturists. And so they provide the grape as we like, and we can pay more than the average of the market, and both are happy. We have the greatest raw material. They have the more satisfaction in enjoying the work.
Sure, in the end, everybody's happy.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Do you find it a little more challenging to sell wines in America because of this intimidation occasionally we have? And after all, in Europe, wine is considered food. We're not quite at that place yet.
I mean, I would say not particularly in America. I mean, this phase has been already, to me, is already gone. I would say that I find that much more difficult in the Asia, for example. They start to drink wine no more than 20 years ago. when here it start to be pretty much normal to drink wine. Of course, you still find quite some intimidation. So, but that happens even in Italy a little bit. Probably here a little bit more. Or moreover, probably here more stereotyped. So I do remember a couple of years ago, I was in a wine tasting like this, a walk around tasting, and I have my with other producers from all over the world, and they have my panel of Veneto, Masi, region, and so on. And this guy came there and saw Italy. Oh, Sangiovese. So which there's nothing wrong, but it's just not totally true that it's old Sangiovese, you know. It was so convinced that, okay, I know what I'm tasting here, you know.
It's like a typical stereotype.
Yeah, of course.
But that always comes back to the idea of education, and that's why you're here today.
Absolutely, yeah. No, anyway, it's always nice to, even with this guy of Sangiovese, to tell him to make him discover something nicely without getting offended or whatever. Just say, okay, you know, Sangiovese is a great variety, but you are a little bit north of the net, and we do grow other varieties and do our techniques and blah, blah, blah. So
we all need to learn. Raphael, for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, how would they find out about you?
As simply as www.masi.it, masi.it, of course.
Great. I really appreciate you taking the time. A real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Very kind of you. Thank you.
Visit masi.it for more information.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2014.